Welcome to the Capital Connection, a weekly program questioning New York State leaders on a variety of issues. Your host is Dr. Alan Chartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Distribution of the Capital Connection is made possible with the help of New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org. And NISCASA, the New York State Coalition Against Sexual Assault, working to support men in their decisions to end sexual violence with the My Strength Is Not For Hurting campaign, online at nyscasa.org.
Welcome to the Capital Connection. I'm Alan Chartok. Our guest today is New York State Lieutenant Governor Robert Duffy, a Democrat who was elected alongside Governor Andrew Cuomo in 2010. Before serving as Lieutenant Governor, Duffy was the chief of police and then the mayor of Rochester. Lieutenant Governor, or as we say in the business, Governor Duffy, welcome to the program.
Alan, thank you very much. Great to be back.
Well, good to have you here. The governor has now given his state of the state. You have introduced him. It was an impressive group of people all saying very good things about the governor and coming up there. And it was magnificently put together, I thought. So let me ask you, what's in line for this year? What do you want to get accomplished?
Well, first of all, the governor announced his budget, which I think is a huge accomplishment for him. We started off 2 years ago with a $10 billion budget gap. This year he has it down to $1.3 billion, and that's going to be bridged with economies inside of state government for the most part. And the most important thing is no new taxes. Taxes won't go up. The governor has made a pledge to, since going into office, that we will not be the tax capital of the country, and his fiscal policies and spending and his discipline in terms of driving spending down and trying to increase development has been phenomenal. So I think the budget is one great accomplishment.
Well, wait. Let's just stop there for a second because you got into a little tiff with one of your own the other day, Stephanie Miner of Syracuse, and she thinks, okay, you balance it on the state level, but you've given us and our localities a much tougher road to hoe, and you promised basically mandate reform, and you basically haven't given it to us. And you answered her. What'd you say?
Well, first of all, Stephanie is a friend and a colleague, but, you know, I'm a former mayor. I was the mayor of Rochester. It was in my second term when I left to join Governor Cuomo on his ticket. I understand the pressures of city budgets. I cut taxes. We increased development. I certainly had issues with a number of mandates and pressures that were being put on me at that time. But I would say this without any hesitation. If I were the mayor today with Governor Cuomo in office, I would be doing cartwheels down the street because he gets it. He is trying to change the structural issues that impact cities across the state. He is committed to upstate economic development. He's committed to the upstate cities as well as, you know, New York City and downstate. What he did last year was pass Tier 6 with pension reform. That was a huge lift. And there were a lot of leaders around the state that were hesitant about supporting him on that. It was very controversial. Certainly organized labor was not happy with it, but they came along, and I think they'll be great partners with that. This year, with his plan to smooth out the spending for the pension costs for cities and spread those out, it really is an adjunct to last year.
Well, he got blasted. He got blasted in the New York Post by McManus. You know, I think that it's fair to say that from the very beginning, the Post has been a big cheerleader for the governor for basically saying that his so-called pension reform is to allow localities to borrow on their future and to pay it back because of, quote, efficiencies later on. Is that true?
No, it's not true. It's not borrowing. What the governor is proposing in this plan is understanding, first of all, with his Tier 6 legislation last year, a bulk of those savings are down the road. He acknowledges there are some very, very high pension costs now. What he is saying is that looking at lowering payments now, you might pay a little more years down the road, over 25 years, than you would then with the savings, but you're not borrowing. In essence, you're trying to even off the expenditures over that period of time. If you go back many years, there was a period of time when cities had zero contributions to the pension plan.
Mm-hmm.
At one point when the market was doing very, very well.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
It's changed dramatically. And keep in mind, the governor is not in charge of the pension system. The controller is. But what he's offering is an adjunct to last year's legislation to help. And there's a number of things that he's doing. He's investing with the regional councils, with cities across upstate. the issue of mandates. And, you know, I had a maintenance of effort legislation when I was mayor in Rochester that was put on by previous administrations that I argued against. But the one thing about mandates is they are not in the purview of the governor to unilaterally just eliminate those. The legislature is critical, the Assembly and the Senate. And the one thing this governor has done is build momentum, and he doesn't kick the can down the road. He moves the ball ahead. He is building momentum. He's building confidence. He listens to the mayors and the county executives. And I will tell you this, he's listened. He's moving that the ball down. I think we're on a path right now that the mayors will certainly appreciate now and many years down the road. But he is getting it done. He is listening. And I think the criticism that I've heard so far, Alan, is unfair. Yeah.
Okay, I hear you. But first of all, this is not an enemy. This is not a Republican, Ms. Miner. And so, you know, you got to think about that. Now, there was a lot of criticism of the administration from people who said we expected mandate relief talk, and we're not seeing any real evidence of that right now. Yeah, you can talk about how as soon as the people who are coming in under the new pension plan get in there, it'll be less. But isn't there some way that the localities can be helped right now?
Well, I think, first of all, the governor in a very, very tough economic year, what he's done is he's kept AIM aid flat. I know some of the mayors were concerned about the aid localities being cut. He kept it flat. Last year, the Tier 6, this year, the stable rate pension, the option that they have. He's looking at local sales tax rate renewals. There's a number of things he's doing right now that he is hitting on mandates. There's a mandate relief council. Chaired by the secretary. I have chaired a number of open meetings.
Governor, can you just tell everybody out there who may, you know, there's still people who have no idea what mandate relief is. Could we back up and tell everybody?
Well, a mandate really is basically, it would be a law, legislation, say from the state or from the federal government, where localities have to pay costs for that. One large mandate on counties is Medicaid. The governor is gone through last year, this year, extraordinary reductions in the growth of Medicaid. As of next year, the state will cover all the future growth. County executives have a much better way to plan ahead for their financial futures. The pension, what the biggest cost in local governments right now is pension, and the governor led pension reform last year. Tier 6 is huge. But one of the criticisms last year that some people made who decided to criticize the governor was that these savings were more long-term. So this year he comes in with a plan to help smooth out those payments to really take advantage of those savings now in a way where they're not waiting 10 or 15 years or 20 years to reap some of that. It's helping them now. And mandates are not just one singular item. They are usually formed by legislation, the Assembly and the Senate. And what the governor has done absolutely superbly since coming into office is work with the Senate leadership, work with the Assembly leadership, forge a path forward where there is not gridlock. And there are a number of other mandates that he is working on right now that are not easily done or easily accomplished. But, again, I go back to my first point, Alan. He's moving the ball down the road. He's building momentum. And I think that the mayors should be pleased with where he's going with this. And Mayor Miner, as I said before, Mayor Miner is a former colleague. I like Stephanie, and I really was not criticizing her yesterday, but I did say to the Post Standard, if what the governor is doing now is not sufficient, mayors do have an option. And in this case, Mayor Miner could ask for a fiscal oversight board and could ask for that. It requires legislation and legislative approval at the state level. It's a drastic change.
But how does that help her with the mandates? I mean, the
A fiscal oversight board really relieves governments of a lot of the contractual obligations they have. There is a community oversight board. A series of board members are appointed.
But she's not running her. She's not running
decisions on finances.
But she doesn't get to run her own city. Then somebody else comes in and does that.
You know what? I would tell you this. I understand the frustration, and to Mayor Miner and the other mayors, I've been there. I've lobbied in Albany. I've been there. But I'll say this, Alan, without any hesitation. There's never been a more responsive governor to upstate in our cities than Governor Cuomo.
Would you have taken a fiscal control board if you were in trouble in Rochester?
If I could not meet my obligations, I would. But you know what? When I was the mayor, we cut taxes or kept them flat. We reduced them a couple of years. We looked at development. Yes, the biggest mandate I had was a maintenance of effort obligation to our city schools. $119.1 million during Governor Spitzer's administration that was put on, regardless of drops or reductions in number of students or any changes. The city was obligated to pay that, and that was a huge chunk of our property tax levy. But we did it. It took away the ability to negotiate with the city and the school district to try and look for consolidations and look for ways to save money. But the mandates, there are many, but I would say the two biggest mandates that hit counties and cities, Medicaid for the counties, yep, pensions for the cities, the governor has brought reform to both in 2 years.
Stop on that, because tell us a little bit more about the Medicaid. They're still yelling about Medicaid.
Well, Medicaid is, people that aren't yelling about Medicaid are those that need health care and certainly are benefiting from those in nursing homes and those that really need the care. One of the things that the governor has done is he has promised that the state will assume all growth after year number three. So certain percentages last year, this year, next year. After next year, the state will assume all future growth. So counties can just plan on what they had spent before. There's a baseline rate, so they don't have to come mm-hmm. back each year with their budgets and try and figure out what the growth will be that year. That's a huge lift for the state. And so that's the Medicaid, that's the first one. The pensions, obviously you know, pension reform in Tier 6, changes were made that were not easy for the governor to lead. But here we have the two biggest mandates across the state, and he has made significant changes in 2 years. These things can't be turned around, every mandate, overnight. They didn't happen overnight. This is years and years, if not decades, of legislative proposals. People have put legislation in, and down the road, cities and counties have had to pay for that. The governor, in 2 years, has, to me, created a path forward and a reversal of the two biggest ones so far. That if I were a mayor or county executive, I would be very happy.
And okay.
There's frustration, obviously, with the mayors, and yes, it's tough, a tough time financially. It's tough to lead any government during a recession. But Alan, the one thing I want to point out: the governor does not have the ability to print money. He does not have a bottomless pit of money in Albany. He is doing the best he can. He is making these changes. He's keeping taxes flat. He's not raising taxes. He's cutting spending. He's cutting spending in state government. He, with the labor contracts with the state, there's been at least two straight years, in some cases 3 years, of zero raises. And I know that there are localities around the state with increases of 1, 2, 3% or more. The governor has taken a hard line with it, with his own workforce inside. We're all facing the same challenges.
But you said that he wasn't going to kick the can down the road. And I think what the mayors and county execs are saying here is that he has. He's put it on their shoulders.
Well, he's not kicking the can down the road. What he is doing, Alan, he's moving the ball. He's
okay.
Moving the ball ahead.
Okay.
And, I have been there. I have put together budgets. I've had the same pressures. And as I said when I first started today, to have Governor Cuomo in office when I was mayor would have been a welcome relief. He listens. He is getting it done. And, you know, I'm sure people may think, and some things aren't happening fast enough. Well, it's not just on the governor's shoulders. These are huge legislative issues.
But he can have whatever. But Lieutenant Governor, he can have anything he wants, can he? I mean, you know, he's got the Democrats in the Assembly and in the Senate. He's got them, you know, by the hair, because without them, the Republicans would not be in office right now. And obviously, you sit up there, you're in charge of, at least nominally, of the Senate. So we have this strange amalgam of the runaway Democrats versus the regular Democrats and then the Republicans. And it seems to me that this governor can have whatever he wants from those Republicans. Why am I wrong about that? Because if they don't have him, they're gone.
Well, first of all, I would not characterize it as a governor could have anything he wants. What the governor has done extraordinarily well is bring both sides together. He has brought Democrats, Republicans. He's brought the Assembly and the Senate. And, Alan, you've been around Albany a lot longer than I have.
Too long. Yeah.
You know the gridlock. You know how it was in the past. And it has changed. It has changed so extraordinarily well and thoroughly in the last 2 years. I mean, the whole demeanor in Albany, the collegiality is not something that is just a byline. It's happening. I see it every day. And you have people that disagree. You have Democrats that disagree with Democrats, Republicans with Republicans, and then cross party lines. But what the governor has done is he spends time with people. He sits down. He brings both sides together. And the path forward, sometimes it is a compilation of these positions, but what he's doing is he's moving government forward. He's getting results. He's getting things done. We all remember the gridlock. We all remember the budgets that never came on time, agencies that could not be funded. We have two on-time budgets right in a row. And as I mentioned the other day when I introduced the governor, if we get three in a row this year, it's the first time since 1977 where that's happened. That is change. And I hope people just would stop and realize, before they criticize, look what is happening. It is happening. It's changed before their very eyes. They are part of it. And it's exciting for the state. You know, in any relationship, be it political, be it marriage, friendships, there's a give and take. Nobody ever has their own way all the time. It's trying to get people to come together, work towards some common goals. And what he has done for New York State in a very short time, the budget, and we could talk about the issues of
economic development. I want to, and I want to spend about a minute and a half on each of them because I got so many things I want to ask you before the end of the program. Let's take them one by one. Gun control. Now, that was a gutsy move, I thought. You know, I happened to join with the governor on that one, and I'm feeling tremendous pushback here in my position. I take it you guys are feeling the same thing.
Well, one thing about Governor Cuomo, he does not take on things that are easy, nor things that are not controversial, because the biggest changes that make the most differences in people's lives across the state are controversial. Marriage equality was just that. He pushed and got that done. Gun control, I'll give you the proviso. The governor is a hunter. He is a gun owner. I am a gun owner. He is not against the Second Amendment. He is not against people with guns. It's making our state safer. The assault weapons ban, it's been stated, as the governor said very eloquently, nobody hunts deer with an assault rifle.
Yeah.
He is looking at bringing common sense to the system, a focus on mental health. And, Alan, I spent 28 and a half years in law enforcement. There is, and I will say this, and the governor fully agrees and says this, there is no piece of legislation, there is no action that will prevent everything, every violent act in the future.
Sure.
How you change a culture, how you change a situation with violence in any state or community is a compilation of things.
But don't you think you put a little bit of an unfair pressure on mental health professionals when you say to them, if somebody's either a danger to themselves or to the state, you have to report them? Doesn't that murder the therapeutic relationship as we know it? I mean, he's gotten some real criticism for that from some of the mental health professionals.
Well, I'm sure that those in the mental health field may feel some of those relationships, could be challenged. But I think I would look at the comparisons and weigh the outcomes. If I am a mental health professional, I'm a therapist, I'm a doctor, I'm a psychologist, and one of my patients I know has access to weapons or owns them, and is very capable of harming himself or others, as a professional, I have a responsibility. And with all due respect and making sure that we abide by HIPAA and all the confidentiality requirements that profession has, these are the things we have to become more attuned to, because far too often we see these tragedies occur, and then we work backwards after the tragedies, after lives are lost, and we find these opportunities that perhaps there could have been an intervention. What the governor is saying, let's think proactively now. Let's keep this at the forefront when we are in the mental health field, as well as gun licensing, and if you are selling guns, if you own guns. I think what the governor is saying is we all have shared responsibilities in trying to make the state safer. And that's what he is doing through his leadership, is really calling upon all these various fields and a compilation of steps that everybody hopes and we want to see, steps that make New York State safer.
Isn't one thing that would be safer is to give some more money to mental health services in New York State?
Well, at this point, I would not be in a position to offer more money, but the governor has won, as he has done with education. You look at an increase this year of over 4%. The governor looks very strategically at areas that he has to invest in. There's not a lot of money, so he invests very carefully, very strategically. That is a case mental health professionals, I think, would have to make. There's no way that more money will just come automatically. There are some things he will clearly have to fund with these efforts. But let's see down the road, where the challenges are and how can we accomplish what we want to accomplish in that field. Can we do it with the current funding? Can we do it with just changing the way we do business? I would leave it to the mental health professionals to really help us understand what they need. And it may not just not be more money. It may be support in other areas, but I would leave it to them to tell us. They're the ones that really are closest to it in the field, what this would require.
Well, we emptied out our mental institutions. We know that, so-called deinstitutionalization. And we said we were going to set up clinics and things for them, but that doesn't exist. I happen to have written my, I'm sorry for being a pain in the neck on this, but I happen to have written my doctoral dissertation on this very subject, and I know we haven't done it.
Well, there has been clearly a change in the institutionalizing of people, and in many ways that's a very good thing. But certainly when that happens, there are other challenges that maybe have not been met as they should. Here's a great opportunity. The governor knows what needs to be done to make our state safer. Here's a chance for these specific areas that I think that profession can be very helpful in putting forth. Here's what we should do. They should really help rewrite some of these strategies that they will need to accomplish this. And my sense is they agree with what the ultimate goal. It's trying to find a path forward. How do we get there?
Okay, fair enough. Let me go to fracking. There are many people who still believe there's going to be limited fracking allowed by this governor and his DEC commissioner and the administration. Can you give us any insight as to what's going on?
Well, I just can tell you that the governor's taking a lot of time deliberating over this. Again, I hear criticism on both sides. And I'm thinking, here's a man who's not making a quick, rash decision. He is going through many, many lengths to make sure all the facts are in. I cannot tell you what his decision will be. I don't think anybody can tell you because he has not made that decision yet. Mm. He is certainly still in the process of gathering data. There are public comments. There is the scientific and medical data. It is certainly very controversial. There are those that want it for the jobs. There are those that don't want it because of the impact on our environment and your water supplies. My sense is, like in most areas of what the governor has done so far, in the end, his final decision will be thoughtful. It will be with great deliberation based on science and data. And like any decision, will it make everybody happy? No good decision makes everybody happy. But I can tell you that any decision he makes is going to be in the best interest of New Yorkers.
Have you been as surprised, Lieutenant Governor Duffy, have you been surprised at how animated and strong the kickback to fracking has been?
Oh, no, not at all. I live in the Finger Lakes. Mm-hmm. So I understand. I live in a gorgeous area of the state. We're surrounded by so many lakes and waters and when you look at different areas of New York State, there is very, very profound resistance to this anywhere, both aesthetically and environmentally. But there are other areas of the state that just as passionately want it for the economic development pieces. So, mm-hmm. Again, it depends where you go and who you talk to. I'm not surprised by the passion on either side of this because there clearly are great points on both sides. And that's exactly why the governor is taking the time that he has taken so far to make sure in the end, whatever the decision is or will be or series of decisions, they will be well thought through and really in the best interest of all New Yorkers. So I think people should just certainly express themselves, but not be critical of this governor and wait for him to come out and make his decision. And he's not stalling. This governor is not afraid of tough decisions. I think he's been very courageous. He's been very bold in what he does. He just wants to make sure what he does in the future is the right one. He realizes how important this is.
Our guest has been Lieutenant Governor Robert Duffy, a Democrat who has been serving alongside Governor Andrew Cuomo. I thank you for answering some of these very tough questions today. I appreciate it, and you've done very well, and I hope that you'll come back again.
Alan, I'd love to come back, and I want you to know that for my last visit, I have an Alan Shartok bobblehead in my office in Albany. So I just want you to know that's not in a drawer. It's displayed proudly in my office.
It doesn't happen to have a bullseye behind it, does it?
Not at all. No, I know. I think it's really an honor to be on your show. Invite me back anytime.
The Capital Connection is distributed with the cooperation of the public radio stations of New York State. Ian Pickus is producer of The Capital Connection, a production of WAMC, Northeast Public Radio in Albany. Support for The Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare online at nysut.org. And NISCASA, the New York State Coalition Against Sexual Assault, working to support men in their decisions to end sexual violence with the My Strength Is Not For Hurting campaign, online at nyscasa.org.